work again. Those who aren't working, of course, you're looking. How can you work? Or else the dole office is on your case that you should pretend that you're looking for a job. In either case, we have to think. Why am I struggling? And what is it for? Now, often we have a hard time seeing ourselves as struggling. Often we think that we're just making our way through life according to how we see is best. And we're trying to accomplish some goals we have for ourselves. So we take pride in that we're just making our own way, dealing with the circumstances, trying to advance our point of view, do what's necessary, put a roof over the head, food on the table, and have a little fun while doing that. We don't really see ourselves as struggling. How many of you see yourself as engaged in a struggle for existence? Anyone? Do you see yourself as engaging in a struggle for existence? You feel that you're doing what you choose to some extent, or a good extent, right? And sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't, and that's it. You can take that all in stride. You feel that in some way you're living according to yourself and your personality, and very few persons actually can see accurately. Very few persons can see that they're actually engaged in a struggle for existence. Now, what's the first thing that should let you know you're engaged in a struggle for existence? The first thing is time. Just the fact that time is ticking away. You are struggling against time because you have a certain amount of years to accomplish what you hope to accomplish. And you don't even know how many years you have. Therefore, you have to blot that out of your mind and think that I've got a long life ahead of me. Even if you do have a long life ahead of you, still it's measured. So you're struggling against a limited lifespan. These are things we don't like to think about. Not only are we struggling against a limited lifespan, but we're struggling against our bodies. Now, how many feel that they're struggling against their body? Yes. Of course, Tracy, she's had an illness. When you have an illness, then reality strikes about the body. Otherwise, the body seems to be a pleasurable instrument until you're sick and everybody gets sick. Anyone else feel they're struggling with the body?
No.
Yeah. My body, right? It's healthy, right? Ben, you feel you're struggling with the body?
Yes, sometimes.
How's that?
Sometimes I'm sick.
But when you're not sick, though, it's all right, yes? What's the quickest way to understand that you're struggling with the body? That's one, but there's an even quicker way before the pain comes. The fact that you're aging. You're not a baby boy anymore. You're not baby girls anymore. So the fact that against your will you got old, that means you're struggling. How many of you here asked to get old? No one. No one here asked to get old. Good, it's coming. Yes. And you know what happens when old age strikes, don't you? Wisdom? Wisdom? Ease? Or maybe senility? Never. Alzheimer's disease? Never. Not a chance. What else besides so-called wisdom and peace in the golden years? But even before death?
Aches and pains.
Yes, aches and pains. Arthritis. Body is breaking down, huh?
Wanting to do things but physically not being able to.
Yes, wanting to do things, physically not being able to. You've got your stockpile of Viagra ready? You won't need it here. Yeah, you'll be strong till the end, right? And where's the wisdom? What kind of wisdom, for example, do you think you'd have when you're an older? Knowledge of... No, let him explain. I'm asking him. What kind of knowledge is that? Would you, might you know who you are? Now, it seems that if you wait your whole life until you're old before you find out who you are, there's a good chance by the time you get to old age, if you do, you'll have banged yourself up pretty good. You're being so active without knowing who you are. It probably pays that from the very beginning of life, we try to understand what I am. It's like if I ask you now, what are you? What would you say?
I want to be healer.
You want to be?
I
want
to be
healer. Healer?
Yeah.
Okay. And what does a healer heal? Human spirit and body. Very good. So obviously, you accept the difference between spirit and body. Oh, so if you cut...
Spirit can heal the body.
Spirit can heal the body. Can you describe this spirit a little bit more? I mean, can we see it in a test tube? How do we see it? You feel it. I mean, with your hands? With your being. You mean your bones and your blood? Your being, well, like what? Here we are, back in the circle again. Now, if we're going to be healing this spirit, like Daniel here, he's a doctor, so he gave me some medicine today. Now, he told me this medicine is going to have a certain effect on your body. Now, he understands I'm dealing with the body, this thing. But what about spirit? How do you deal with that? What do you touch it with? A probe or a stick or... So this is what we have to find out. If I'm not this body, then what am I? And that leads you to the next question. If I'm not the body, why should I try to be happy through the body? Have you ever wondered about that? Why should you try for bodily happiness if you're not the body? Oh, but I know, you think you are the body and spirit together, right? So therefore you go for spiritual and bodily happiness together, right? All in one person, preferably. Find that person who will give you spiritual and physical happiness all in one package, and you've struck it rich. Right? Naturally, a healer like you wouldn't dare be caught with anything less than a spiritual relationship, right? Most of the time, right? Well, naturally, there are some exceptions. You know. You can't get completely what you want, then you compromise a little bit. Right? Yes, we have to be practical. The body has demands. And if the body doesn't encounter another body, the demand starts to build up. And then you begin to calculate, well, it's not completely spiritual. Nevertheless, you know, we are the body combined with the spirit, so I'll just concentrate on the bodily side this weekend. Maybe next weekend I'll meet someone who is more on the spiritual side, and then we'll balance it out. Yeah, that's it. This weekend I'll go for the flesh, the next weekend I'll go for the spirit. And it balances out that way. Right? You haven't thought like that, Tracy, have you? Don't ask. Okay. So, people quite often come here with, you know, thinking like you do, and it's understandable, because we're growing up in a society that does not equip its citizens with spiritual knowledge. Therefore, everyone gropes and grapples with these vague terms, your being, your spirit. And then they end up saying, well, you know. Actually, no one knows. So what we have is a situation in which people are heading towards old age, they don't know who they are, and they're looking for wisdom. What happens actually in old age? What is your mentality? Lamentation. Oh, I should have done this, I should have done that, now I'm getting old. I can't repeat. Those opportunities won't be repeated. And where are you going after old age?
Death.
Is that it? The Grim Reaper. Where are you heading after old age?
Not sure.
Mm. Where would you be heading? I'm sorry, what is your name?
Mike.
Yeah. Mike, where are you heading after?
I would say back into the universe, back into the world itself.
You mean like ashes to ashes, dust to dust?
The one?
All right, one at a time. We hear from you every week. You've been coming for years. Yes, please. Yes. So, now, what makes you sure that you will be heading back to this one? Ah, you can't. You're sure about that? You're sure about that?
No.
I see. How do we get information about what will happen to us after death? After the death of the body?
I would say we find out when we die.
We find out when we die. Now, that seems to be very risky. Don't you think?
Manageable.
Life's full of risk.
But this seems to be a very big gamble. I mean, you're gambling away. You're all those years could have been in vain. Mm-hmm. But don't you worry, what will I come back as? No, it doesn't matter. Don't you think that it would be very good to make sure you have the best possible life in the next life? Just like in taking care of your body, you obviously do the things that you must be practicing yoga or something. Yes, because otherwise you couldn't sit like that. So you're concerned that your body would have a good future. Now, you should be precisely concerned what would be your future after death. We always give the example, if you're in a flat now and you know you're going to be kicked out at any moment, naturally you'd be concerned. What will the next flat be that you're moving into? Right? You wouldn't want to be kicked out of your present flat without any idea of what your next residence will be. Certainly, you know you're going to be kicked out of this body. But you should have some idea what your next body will be. It's not just a haphazard thing. An intelligent person considers. But before you can consider what your next body will be, you have to understand the difference between spirit and matter. Otherwise, you think, oh, it's all a combination, therefore it doesn't matter what you do. It does matter what you do. You have to be very precise. How is it that you are spirit and matter together? That's like saying, I'm sweater and flesh together. You consider that you are, for example, shirt and flesh together? No, the shirt's covering you. Similarly, this body is covering us. But what is the us the body covers? That is the spirit soul. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains, asmin dehe. Within the body, there is the soul. And although the body changes, the soul does not change. And at the time of death, the soul goes to another body, according to the consciousness of the person. Someone who is someone with cool intelligence, an actual wise person, can see all this, how the soul changes from one body to another, and such a person is not bewildered. But for the person lacking in knowledge, there's nothing but bewilderment. So our first step in spiritual life is to get precise knowledge. I am not this body, I am spirit soul. The body is a covering. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that just like you change clothes, similarly you change bodies. Now, how did you get the present body? You should think. Does anybody here bother to ask the question? Why do I have the body I have now? Did you ever think like that? What do I do with this body in the first place? No. So if we don't know why we have the present body, we certainly won't know what our next body will be. But we leave it all to chance. Risk. Well, I'm a good person, so it'll be all right. It'll work out okay. No, an intelligent person cannot live his or her life in that way. You have to be completely on top of the whole process of changing bodies. Now, where are you going to get knowledge about the system of changing from one body to another? That knowledge you have to get from the source of the system. You mentioned the source. Now, how to get knowledge from the source? That is the quest. The source emanates all energies. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Aham sarvasya prabhavo matya sarvam prabhavate. I'm the origin of everything material and spiritual. Everything emanates from me. Krishna also says, Bijam mam sarvabhutanam. I'm the seed of all existence. Now, how do you get to know the source? The one, as you say. Where do you get that kind of knowledge? The best place is to take it from the one, the source. Then you can see the whole system, because you're getting the knowledge from the system maker. So this is our problem, that we are going through life very blindly and we don't care. See, I'm taking off this jumper, but does that mean I'm finished? Similarly, you can change your body and it doesn't mean you're finished. The intelligent person knows how to change the body purposely for the best thing. The non-intelligent person just leaves it to chance. Oh, I don't know what will happen after death. What does it matter? It'll be all right. The universe will take care of me. How many here feel the universe will take care of them? Ben, you feel the universe will take care of you? You feel like that, the universe?
I don't know.
Okay. Mike, you feel the universe will take care of you? Any of that? Tracy, will the universe take care of you? You have to look and see. Why do I have this body? It's been forced upon me. How many of you remember asking, give me a body? No, you didn't ask, but you have it. How many of you remember saying, give me a body that gets old? How many of you asked for puberty? Do you remember signing up? Mike, did you sign up for puberty?
Yeah, yeah,
I'm an 8-year-old boy. I want to go for it. Do you remember it?
Yeah. I'm ready. I'm 11. Can't wait. I'm signing up. Let it come.
No. It was forced on you. So this is struggle for existence. Having bodies forced upon you, having bodily changes forced upon you, whether puberty or old age or disease, forced upon you. But Tracy still wants to look like that, always young, in her mid-20s. But it won't happen. It's not about to happen. That means she's struggling. Something's been forced upon her. Now, why is this? Another way we can see that we're struggling, it's not only that we're struggling with the changes of the body, or we're struggling with having a body to begin with, we are struggling to achieve things with this body. When you wake up in the morning, you just don't lay there and say, oh, I'm not going to do anything. No, you get up and try to adjust and alter the day for your satisfaction. Right? That means struggle. Things aren't the way you want, so you spend your day trying to get them the way you want, right? That's the name of the game. And day after day, you keep trying for that. And when you get, you know, frustrated, you know, you just get drunk or something, forget about your troubles, and then get back into action again. But generally, every day, you're thinking, how am I going to make things go the way I want? That means struggle. That means things are not the way you want, but you're thinking, let me adjust, let me alter. Now somehow, you don't see that daily performance as a struggle. You just see it as self-expression. This is how you delude yourself. It's just me, expressing myself, being creative, my life options. No. Better to see as struggle. This is described by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita as prakriti sthani karshati. The living entity is stuck in the oppressive material atmosphere and is struggling. Just like a fly lands in honey. And what happens? The more the fly vibrates its wings and moves its legs to get out of the honey, the more it becomes stuck in the honey. The more its wings become covered with honey, and it can't get out. Similarly, we're like that. We think we're expressing ourselves and being creative, but actually we're just entombing ourselves in material existence. Piling up reactions for ourselves that we'll have to experience in the next life. But we don't know. Just like little children. Suppose when you were little, how many of you when you were little told your parents you didn't want to go to school when you were 5 or 6? Anyone here? I still remember when I was going to first grade, I was sitting on the lap in the front seat of the car. I was sitting on the lap of my neighbor. And I had it all worked out in my mind, and I did it. As soon as the car got in front of the school, I turned to everyone and announced with great definitiveness to all the kids in the car and the two adults, "This is the school I do not like." Yeah, very solemn pronouncement. Now, how many of your parents listened to you? Mary, you told your parents what? You didn't want to go? And did they listen to you? Did anyone's parents here say, "Oh, you're 6 years old, you don't want to go to school, that's all right"? No. Did you do that, Mike, with your parents? They said, "To school you go, right?" Now, why is that? The parents are saying that although you don't see the consequences, we do. You must consider the future. Education will help you get what you want. Go to school. So we are considering the future in that way. But why is it we don't consider the future? What happens after old age and death? Some or other is a barrier for how long we consider the future. We do that because we have no solution. Therefore, we don't want to think about it, but we still want to give ourselves a false sense of honor. No one wants to walk around saying, can you imagine you're meeting your mate on the street? I was about to say cobber, because I've been talking to some fancies. You never said that in New Zealand, did you, cobber? In Tasmania, it's yeah, it's the number one option, you know, instead of mate, it's cobber. So, you meet your mate on the street and just, you know, I've got no solution to the problem of life. How many of you would ever say that? Dan, would you greet your mates that way? Someone calls you up. Yeah, imagine Tracy, one of your girlfriends, calls you up.
Hi, Trace. How you doing?
I've got no solution to the problems of life.
Especially if he said, I've got no solution to problems of life, and what about you? Immediately they would say, come on, Trace, get serious. You know, what are you trying to do? What are you trying to do to yourself? But that is the reality. We have no solution, and therefore we still want to give ourselves a sense of honor and pride, so we don't think about it. And we busy ourselves with this tiny lifespan, trying to make something of it, and even forget that it's a struggle. When the fact is, we're operating with very limited options. Birth is forced on us. No one here has to be born. Old age is forced on you. Disease is forced on you. Death is forced on you. And then within those four main phases, you have all sorts of other things forced on you. Puberty, or the midlife crisis, when adults reach the age of 45. All these things forced upon you. The very body itself, you have no idea why you have it. But still we go on talking about spirit and being. If you're a spirit, what are you doing in a body? How did you get it? You say we are spirit and body together. Why? Why does spirit need the body? Bhagavad Gita will teach you that the spiritual energy is eternal and the bodily energy that is temporary, in that this body is not going to last. Now, what is spirit doing with the body? Does the spirit require a body to exist? No. To think so is like thinking, you know, it's like when the drunkard thinks I must have alcohol to live. So now I've got another question. If you recognize that to some degree you are spirit, everyone here agrees that? Yes, ma'am. To some degree your spirit, right? Whatever. Anyone else? Our guest in the back? Yes. Alright. Okay. Where is the home of the spirit? We say ashes to ashes, dust to dust. You know, the body will break down and just mix back with the earth. Where does the spirit go? And how? The home of the body is the earth. It breaks down. I saw a letter from someone saying that, why should I worry about what happens after death? I know what will become of me. I will break down in the forest and I will fertilize a new breed of plant. So the home of the body is the earth. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. But what is the home of the spirit? Oh, that we don't know. Does spirit grow out of the earth? No. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains that spirit has its own dimension. That is the spiritual world, presided over by Krishna, the Supreme Spirit. And this material world is the prison. How could this material world be a prison? Because things are forced on you here, but in the spiritual world, nothing is forced on you. The spiritual world is based on pure attraction for Krishna. Now, why should you be attracted to Krishna? Because Krishna has no matter, no material defects. Although Krishna owns all the matter, nevertheless, in the spiritual world, there is simply the spiritual energy. Matter is Krishna's inferior energy. He explains this in Bhagavad Gita. Sanskrit, Krishna says, I've got something superior to this matter that you're all so hung up about. I've got another energy. Yes, Krishna says, the matter is my energy, but there's something else that's superior. That is the spiritual energy. This spiritual energy is actually maintaining the material world, because of spirit, matter, goes through various phases. As soon as the spirit leaves the body, then the body doesn't go through any phases. So the spiritual energy is there in the spiritual world. It's also there in the material world. But in the material world, it's in the background, so to speak. Everything is, all activity is based on the spiritual energy, but in the foreground, to untrained eyes, there's simply matter. But in the spiritual world, there's simply the spiritual energy. That means no limitation, no struggle, nothing forced. Struggle and limitation is the hallmark of the material energy. The spiritual world is where there's simply pure attraction to Krishna. That's the principle of the spiritual world, attraction for Krishna. Once you begin to understand Krishna, how Krishna attracts everyone and everything, then you'll begin to understand the spiritual world. Outside of the principle of attraction, there's no meaning to the spiritual world, and there's even no meaning to the material world. This material world, it operates according to false attraction. People are falsely attracted to matter, arrangements of matter. And the spiritual world operates according to correct attraction for Krishna, which is natural. Right now in the material world, we are artificially unattracted to Krishna. We are attracted to matter. And we're looking for happiness in matter. How many of you think of your life in that way? I'm looking for happiness in matter. No. But that's what's going on. I mean, it's not that you just, Friday comes and, by golly, I'm going to get some matter tonight. You don't think like that. But that's actually what you're looking for. Have any of you ever called up your friends and, Carol, you ever called up your friends in need and said, hey, you know, I really like a pleasing arrangement of matters, man. You got any tips? Seen any good packages of matter lately? Oh, him? Oh, no, I was with him last month. Oh, you call up your friends, I'm in the mood for matter. You ever did that with Daniel? Huh?
I thought it was a bit more romantic.
So let's be factual, you know?
No, that's factual.
Yes. How are you, Jewish tonight? You know, I'm in the mood for matter. What do you think of that one, Tracy? It's actually precise, you know? So the material world means we're trying to get happiness out of matter. That means physical matter as well as subtle matter or psychic matter. It's still matter. The spiritual world means happiness from spirit. Spirit means two things. You as the individual spirit soul and Krishna, the supreme soul. So there's a relationship between the two. That is the attractiveness of the spiritual world, relationship. In the material world, we're trying for relationships from matter. In the spiritual world, you're trying, you don't even have to try, it's a natural occurrence of the soul. You're acting out of spiritual relationship between the Supreme Soul, Krishna, and individual soul. But as long as we think we're going to be happy in the material world, we'll never take the time to revive our spiritual existence. And at best, we make kind of compromise talk like, well, we're a combination of spirit and matter. Actually, they're two separate things, although they're both energies of Krishna. So, sometimes people say, well, this is dualism. You know, on the one hand, you got spirit. On the one hand, you got matter. Now, if these are two separate things, how can they combine to form a living entity? You see, materialists, they criticize that, oh, you're trying to give the explanation of the soul. You're just opting for the ghost in the machine explanation. Whereas we are more scientific. You look for the ghost in the machine, that there's a spirit soul activating the matter. But by doing that, you're positing two separate things, and you have no idea how they interact. And how can they interact when they're completely separate? This is their reply, because transcendentalists, they criticize the materialists, that you have no proof how matter can produce life, or how from matter life can come. You have no proof of that. There's something else. And then the materialists, they respond, oh, the ghost, that's what you're referring to, the ghost that makes the matter work. Ah. You have some kind of religious belief or faith in this spirit, this ghost stuff that makes the matter work right. We're scientific. You're primitive. But how scientific is it to have faith in matter? That matter can produce life, matter can produce consciousness. You've never seen that. So basically, your life will be a choice of whether you'll have faith in matter or faith in spirit. Now, you just don't want to rest on faith. You want to take up processes that will verify that faith. Now, what is the process that will verify that everything, including life, comes from matter? No one can present that process. But in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna presents the process how everything comes from spirit. How you can verify that. Therefore, we say that Krishna consciousness is the superior scientific experience. Because the source of all energies is saying, here's the process to verify that there is a spiritual energy. No scientist can present to you a process for verifying that everything comes from matter. Not possible. If we take our information from Krishna, then the wonders of the spiritual energy become known to us. The prime wonders of the spiritual energy are that everything is personal. Personality is not just a symptom of material existence. Personality is actually, it actually indicates the spiritual energy, but we have no idea of personal existence in the spiritual world. That you have to hear about, you have to hear that from Krishna. How is the spiritual energy attractive? Unless you know that, you will not give up your grip on matter. So people who say that, oh, we're both matter and spirit, we're the body and spirit, they can never tell you the attractiveness of the spirit. Therefore, they must remain submerged in attractiveness for the body. Now, where are you going to find out about the attractiveness of the spirit soul? What does the spirit soul do that you want to be attracted about? If you talk about bodies, everyone knows what bodies do. But if you talk about what does the spirit soul do, no one knows. The spirit soul exists in a perfect relationship with the Supreme Soul. That relationship is such that there is never any diminution. There's no diminishment. It simply increases in freshness. No staleness. That's why we long for such relationships in the material world. We're looking for a relationship that will always bubble up with freshness. Because we have this unconscious memory of the spiritual world where we had that relationship with Krishna, ever fresh. That's another name for Krishna, Navayovana, ever youthful, ever fresh. But in the material world, everything you get your hands on always goes stale. You all know that. The best moments in your life went stale. The best love affairs you had, they went stale on you. One person in this room, a few months ago, was totally absorbed in love. Freshness of love. Now, finish. Everything in the material world is like that. Take your best thing and watch it wilt before your eyes. Even your beloved body will wilt like a flower. Things that you thought were wonderful and exhilarating, gradually you get tired of. But the spiritual world is something else. There's no influence of time in the spiritual world. Time does not rule spirit. Time rules matter. So if you say that you recognize that to some degree you are spirit, then you have to understand what is the dimension where spirit thrives. And why am I not cognizant of that dimension now? Why am I just operating in terms of the body? And all my hopes for pleasure are bound with the body. One problem when we start talking about the body and spirit is that we don't know the origin of these energies. We don't know the origin of material energy, but to speak of the spiritual energy. So it's not like there's one thing known as spirit and there's one thing known as matter. And in some mysterious way, the two act. No. Both are Krishna's energies. It's not that the matter and spirit are existing like on their own out in the middle of nowhere. No. They interrelate under the order of Krishna. So that way there's no dualism. There's no like extreme separation between matter and spirit. They're both energies of the same person. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, it's my material energy. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, and I've got another energy of mine, the spiritual energy. So who is this Krishna who has such energies? Wherever you go, you'll find matter and spirit. Everywhere in the universe. So who is the source, the proprietor of these energies that are everywhere? That's what we should find out. That's the kind of wisdom we want to have before old age comes. But when we do not have a lifestyle that allows for spiritual discovery, Krishna conscious discovery, then we're forced to struggle and think that it's just me expressing myself. You're trying to carve out a niche for yourself in this temporary material world with a temporary body. You're trying to establish yourself. This is me. And while you're saying that, everything is corroding. Even what you think is yourself is corroding. This is, and it's just disappearing before your eyes. And then death comes, and where do you go? You don't know. You trust in the universe. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains exactly what the universe does to you. So if you want to trust the universe, you should find out what the universe is going to do. Krishna says, Mayajaksena prakriti suyate satcharacharam. This material universe operates under my direction. And it's producing all varieties of living bodies. According to your desire, you get a certain kind of body. So trusting in the universe means that you're leaving yourself open for material nature to give you another body in your next life according to your mentality. It doesn't have to be a human body. So yes, trust in the universe and don't complain when you get a dog's body, tree body, fish body. How many of you have gone to a state agent and said, well, you know, I want a new flat, I'm looking for another house, and whatever you arrange will be all right. Adam, when you were looking for a place in Palmerston, did you do that? Why did you go all the way down to Palmerston from Auckland to look yourself? Why didn't you just get on the phone and call down to all these things in Palmerston? Whatever house or flat you arrange for me, it's all right. I'm just trusting the estate agents. Has anyone looked for a home in that way? No. You're on to it. Like, oh, let me... going to be able to, you know, get amongst your friends and say, you know, I really don't know what my next body is going to be. Now that sounds totally uncool. So instead you say, yeah, hey, you know, we just trust in the universe. Everyone says, oh, we're great. Yeah, we'll all drink to that. So imagine, Tracy, calling up your parents. You know, Mom, I really don't know what my next body is going to be. Try it sometime. What would she say if you did that? What? What do you think, Mike, if you called your parents up and, you know, Dad, I just don't know what my next body is going to be.
He probably told me I'll come back and go.
There's a possibility. Goats can eat anything. And also, goats can engage in conjugal affairs even up to the moment of death. You see? They can be led away to slaughter and still live.
Hunting.
Yes? Uh-huh. Used to hunt goats? Mountain goats and wild goats? So what? And describe what would they be doing?
Well, they can see so out into the film for their arrows.
So,
yeah.
It sounds like the best body for most people that they have today, right? So you're there just shooting them full of arrows, isn't it?
Not bad at all.
So what did you think? Did you ever think, well, this could be me in my head? Now, according to today's human being, that would be a very great achievement to go on in such activity while someone, you know, to the moment of death. And you just see yourself, you know, acting in that way. Meanwhile, you know, someone's filling you with arrows or bullets. Trusting in the universe means that. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that according to the laws of material nature, if you're attached to a certain kind of lifestyle, material nature will give you the perfect body for that lifestyle in your next life. Because this human body is only good for a few things. A human body is especially good for having a discussion like we're having now. But for other things, ghost body, as you yourself experience, is better. Yes? The goats don't have to pretend, oh, I'm having a spiritual relationship with this goat. <All right? laughs> Human beings, they have to pretend like that. Now, why did you think it was pleasure to go out hunting goats?
Oh, values that just live on it.
Well, that is better than going to a supermarket and purchasing it, because at least if you're hunting it, you're seeing, you know, that you are participating in slaughter. Whereas the average person goes to the supermarket and doesn't see that. They just think, I'm getting some flesh, nicely wrapped. Right. So you saw actually what was going on, and finally you stopped, right? According to the Vedas, someone who's attached to eating meat, they can eat an insignificant creature like deer or goat, but never cows, because cows are like mother, they give milk. So you can, once a month, you can, in the middle of the night, when there's no moon, you can kill a goat or a deer. You just see yourself going out, pitch dark, midnight, and there's no moon. And then you can slaughter a goat or a deer. And before you kill it, you have to utter a mantra. Mamsa kadati iti mamsa. In Sanskrit, the word for meat is mamsa, you, me. Because the mantra that you have to recite before killing the animal is, I'm killing you to eat now. And that means in the next life, you'll get to kill me and eat me. So you say that, and then you kill the animal. Obviously, you'll start to think after a while. Huh? Mamsa, me, you. That's the name for flesh in Sanskrit. So you obviously begin to think like that. Yes. Now you have to apply that same intelligence to all aspects of life. Why just that one thing? Why not so many things? But where are you going to get a whole picture of what actually goes on in existence? You must get that entire picture from the source of all existence. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna presents himself as the source of all existence. Now, what does the source of all existence do? Just be the source? No. Krishna describes that it is not that Krishna is simply the source of everything and that's it. No, although everything emanates from Krishna, Krishna has his own fun-filled existence of unlimited pleasure. So to find out about the qualities and activities of the source of everything, that is the highest knowledge. Just like you are a tiny part of Krishna, yet you have a little life with individual expression. So what is the individual expression of Krishna that we should be interested in? Then you can see how everything fits together. You as the individual soul, Krishna as the Supreme Soul. Then all these things about matter and spirit start to be understandable. So the next body is a fact. Therefore you have to think, what will my next body be? Who's running the system? How do I get the present body? Don't trust the universe. That's like the goats trusting, you know, their keeper. What does the keeper do with the goats? He slaughters them. Similarly, you trust the universe, you're just trusting to be slaughtered. The human being has to fight back. I don't want to die. I don't want to see another body. That's a human being. Animals, they just trust. Yes, this farmer will take care of me. Even as they're being led up the ramp at the freezing works, they're still trusting. So they start smelling the blood in the air, right? So we don't want to be trusting like that. Krishna consciousness is an opportunity to understand what's actually going on and how to get the greatest pleasure by your understanding what's actually going on. There's no pleasure in matter. The pleasure is in spirit. And spirit means relationship between you and the Supreme Spirit. But you have to know something about the Supreme Spirit. Then you can understand yourself as individual spirit. We are acquainted with the affairs of matter, but we are not acquainted with the affairs of the spiritual world. So as soon as you say that you are a combination of matter and spirit, then you have to know what is the domain of the spirit. What goes on in the spiritual world? Any questions?
Why do we come as spiritual? Why do we not come as spiritual world?
Why
do we not stay in the spiritual world?
Because you have independence. For there to be love between you and Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there has to be choice. It's not that Krishna forces you. You have to agree for there to be love. Therefore, that means there also has to be a place where you go when you make the wrong choice. So welcome to the material world. You made the wrong choice. Just like there's a prison, whenever I drive down from Auckland to Wellington, right before I hit Desert Road outside of, just south of Tarangi, there's a prison, yes? So? Why is it there? Because some person's made the wrong choice. Ideally speaking. So this material world exists because the residents of the material world made the wrong choice. They thought, let us imitate Krishna, the Supreme Enjoyer. You can't do that in the spiritual world. The post of Supreme Enjoyer is filled. So Krishna says, all right, you don't want to cooperate with me in the spiritual world. You can go to the material world, and there you can hallucinate that you are the Supreme. And that's what we try to do every day. We try to live as if we are the all in all. And we fail miserably. We're strictly bound up by the laws of existence, but we think, oh, I'm expressing myself. I'm trusting in the universe. I'm having a spiritual relationship with my girlfriend or boyfriend. All this blah, blah, blah. And actually, all that's going on is we're completely shackled. Doesn't have to be that way. There's something else for us to do, but we don't know about that. Krishna consciousness means finding out all about that. The spiritual world, the spiritual reality, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the relationships, how Krishna controls matter and spirit, why we got this body, how not to get another body. The living entity shouldn't have taken a material body. It's a mistake. It's like we're all inside the prison, and well, how did you get here? What are we doing here? And then some of us say, what does it matter? It's nice here. Someone was telling me that. When someone had a relative in prison, and the relative was saying, I don't want to get out of here. It's nice. They give you jeans, and they give you, you know, shoes, and there's television, and it's nice in here. So that's like us feeling comfortable in the material world. It's not so bad here. Yes, as no matter what you do, even if you're a vegetarian, if you do not take permission from the proprietor before you use anything, then you're liable. But you're not, obviously a vegetarian is not as liable as a meat eater. Still, you're liable. Everything you do has to be perfectly in harmony with the desires of the proprietor. Otherwise, you're liable for prosecution. Yes. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that Bhoktaram Yagatapasam Sarvalokamaheshram Sudam Savabhutanam, Jatamam Shantamishtati. There'll be peace in your life and in the world when three things are realized. Krishna says that I'm the supreme proprietor, I'm the supreme controller, and I'm the supreme friend. Why when you're planting crops? What about even when you're going for a walk in a park? You're stepping on the heads of the grass. But it gives you permission. So the intelligent person is thinking, everything I'm doing has to be in harmony with the desires of the proprietor, otherwise I'm going to get reaction, I'm liable. Now how do I find out the desires of the proprietor? Suppose I go to Mike's house, you know, I just walk in the door, wow, look at this house here. Wow, I think I'll break a few windows. Yeah, I think I'll, you know, pour some kerosene over his furniture. Yeah, I just got a good feeling in my heart, you know, and that's the main thing. How would you feel, Mike? You'd be very appreciative. And you know what I mean. Yes, still. You want that I recognize that there's a proprietor. But I say, no, I've got a good feeling in the heart. That's the main thing. I feel like I'm a spiritual person. That's all gibberish. We must take into account the desires of the proprietor. I mean, I'm smashing the windows in your house and pouring kerosene and, you know, and all sorts of things. And you ask me, hey, what are you doing? So, you know, I'm just, you know, I'm a spiritual being, you know, and I'm just trusting in the universe, and it'll all work out. Don't worry. Just go with the flow. No, you say, hey, you know, this is my stuff. I don't have much, but, you know, this is my stuff. Why don't you ask me when you can come in? I said, no need for me to do that. I just trust in the universe. So even if we're a vegetarian, that's not enough. You have to take Krishna's permission before you eat. You're liable otherwise. Certainly the reaction you get won't be as severe as a meat eater, but still there's a reaction. All these things you can begin to understand when you study the Krishna conscious knowledge. Therefore, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tattvata. If you can understand the transcendental mystery of my appearance in this world and my activities, then you won't take another body upon giving up the present body. That's Krishna's guarantee. Try to understand me, Krishna says. Try to understand why I appear in this world, what my mission is. And then, when you give up this body, you won't see another material body. How does that sound? It's all right, you want pleasure. You have to want pleasure because you are pleasure-seeking. The living entity is eternally pleasure-seeking. But what's interfering with your seeking pleasure is matter, the body. The spiritual world means no interference from temporariness, no limitations. But what frustrates you in material life is things are ruled by time and things are always limited. Therefore, you get frustrated. So the intelligent pleasure lover looks to another dimension for pleasure. And please remember that as soon as you talk about how you are spirit, you're not simply the body, then you must know something about the spiritual world. All right? So we're going to do a little chanting now. This chanting of Hare Krishna will help us to understand the spiritual world and will help us to understand Krishna. Sound vibration brings you ignorance, and sound vibration brings you knowledge. When you come here, you get the liberating sound vibration that brings you transcendental knowledge. And in your sojourn through material existence, you contact sound vibration that makes you very dull. You are the body, make your body happy. Don't think too much, just act for your own pleasure. Don't worry what your next body will be. You are it, it is you. You are the all is the you. That is the sound vibration of material existence that simply increases the darkness of ignorance. And the sound vibration that brings liberation, that is the Krishna sound vibration. The sound of Krishna is non-different from Krishna. That is the special experience you'll get when you chant. So what I want you to all do when you're chanting is to chant from the heart. The best way is like a child calling out for the mother. Chant from the heart. Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. And that way you'll be able to experience. The best way to chant Hare Krishna is with that attitude that I'm drowning in material existence. I need the rope to catch on to so I can be pulled out of material existence, out of material ignorance, struggling for temporary pleasure. Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. If we chant like that. And then while you're chanting like that from the heart, the main thing is to put your heart into it. Then you can also raise your hands in the air as you feel the spiritual upliftment. And then as the ecstasy starts to permeate your existence, you can sway back and forth with hands in the air, crying out from the heart, Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. Then you'll get the Krishna conscious experience. It's not a secret. All right, well, let's do it. We'll all stand up. Namah Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deva Gauravani Prasadine Nirvishesha Shunyavani Panchakarishutaline Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaurava Chavinda Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Hare, Hare Krishna.